Mukham karoti vacharam bhagam bhagaje griyam satyam vande shikur sitaram Amagyana timirandasya gyananjara shivakaya chakshumitam yena satsurayam shikurayam. Yesterday we had five rules. We had the greedy bee. What did we learn from the honey thief or the greedy bee? Not to hoard, okay? Anybody try to apply this lesson to your life yesterday? Yesterday was a holiday, so I don't think you could make any money yesterday. So you could easily apply the lesson. Oh, but you might have hoarded some wealth, so then you could do something about. Okay, the deer. What did we learn from the deer? Listening. Yeah, don't listen to material sounds and listen to spiritual sounds. Anybody practice that yesterday? Practice chanting Hare Krishna?
Yeah.
Good for you. And you practice not listening to any other thing besides Hare Krishna. And also yesterday our guru was the fish. What did we learn from the fish? Eat only prasad. Okay, don't eat other things. So in case you forget, we have a lot of fish out there. They're your gurus. Whenever you see the fish out there, you can remember the lesson of the fish. Only eat Krishna prasad and not other things. Pingala the prostitute. What did we learn from Pingala?
Detachment.
Oh, amazing, huh? And from the hawk, a different kind of detachment. So from the pingala detachment from sense gratification, and from the hawk or the karara bird, we learn detachment from
possessions.
Yeah. Anybody try to practice these lessons of detachment yesterday? That's hard. And the last guru for yesterday was the child. What did the child teach us?
Simplicity.
Okay? Simple living and high thinking. So that is also taught by the python, and so that's a little different, and the prana, a lot of air. So our five gurus for today will be the young girl, the arrow maker, the snake, the spider, and the wasp. And there will be one added guru, and that is our own body, which will be our guru today. So it's easy because that guru is always with you, and you can listen to the guru of your body. But don't give it everything at once. We have to learn how to actually obey the guru of the body. Not blindly. So the young girl will teach us how to avoid bad association. There was a young girl and she had many bracelets on her wrist, conch shell bracelets. Whenever she would work, they would make a lot of noise. So one day some men came to her house, and they were one of them was interested in marriage, and they came to visit to see her mother and father. And in the background, her mother and father were talking, but then the girl in the background, she was engaged in the menial task of husking rice. So when she was husking the rice, it was making a lot of her bangles were making so much noise, and she was very intelligent. So she broke all the bracelets from her wrist until she only had one bracelet on each wrist, and then there was no more noise. And the reason why she wanted to break those bangles is because she thought, oh, they will think we are very poor because we don't have enough money to have a servant do this menial task, that we are ourselves doing this. So to avoid conflict, one should live alone. This is the lesson. Even if two people live together, there will be frivolous conversation and disagreement. So sometimes when many people live together, there's a lot of clash of interests and in-house fighting occurs. So therefore, it is ideal to live alone, especially if one wants to pursue meditation or other spiritual practices that require concentration. Now, who is this instruction for? Actually, according to Vishnachakrabarti Thakur, this instruction of living alone is for the gyanis, for the yogis, for the impersonalists, but not for the devotees. The devotees should not live alone. because the process of Gyan-yoga demands that the speculating sages live alone, because whenever they get together, they've dedicated their lives to speculation, there will be endless argument and quarreling on technical fine points on the philosophy. So, therefore, to keep a peaceful atmosphere, they should live alone. Now, because devotees don't intimately associate with non-devotees, so it may be said that they do reside alone, because they're alone from the influence of the outside world, so they fulfill the purpose of the service. You see, devotees, because they're on the real platform of desirelessness, not wanting even salvation and mystic powers, they live actually alone from the rest of the world. So to the lesson from the young girl is to give up non-devotee association and cherish devotee association. Madhvacharya comments that one should stay with many devotees because such association awards liberation. So alone means to live with devotees, actually. Because you're really, we are, in a sense, isolated from the outside world. Of course, devotees go out and preach, so they're not alone. But when they live, they don't live in intimate association with the non-devotees. So, how to be determined to get good association? There's one example in from Śrīla Kīrti Prabhu about one kitten who can teach us a lesson, how to be determined to get good association. So Śrīla Prabhupāda, when he was in Los Angeles, he used to take his massage outside with his back turned to the morning sun. And he used to say, the morning sun gives you energy and the afternoon sun takes it away. So one sunny day, Prabhupada decided to have his massage in his favorite place, in the New Dwarka garden. So Śrīla Kīrti said, after I placed the mat on the grass with sandalwood and mustard oil, alongside it, Śrīla Prabhupada sat down cross-legged. While massaging Prabhupada's back, a kitten crawled under the garden gate. Perhaps the kitten wanted to associate with the pure devotee. Śrīla Kīrti was speculating. The little fuzzy thing started to lick Prabhupada's back and affectionately rubbed his fur against his divine grace. Much to my surprise, Prabhupada allowed this to go on for a few minutes. That's all, take him out, Śrīla Prabhupada finally said. Quickly, I grabbed the cat and put him over the fence. Being very small and extremely determined to get more association with Śrīla Prabhupada, the kitten immediately crawled under the gate again. And again. And again. Three times he came in, and three times I dropped him over the fence. Finally, I found cinder blocks and placed them along the bottom of the gate so the kitten could no longer sneak in to get another taste of his divine grace. Being thwarted, he loudly cried outside the gate for the duration of Śrīla Prabhupāda's massage. Howling, he lamented his misfortune. I learned something from that kitten. I should be that eager for the association of the pure devotee. And so we can learn from the kitten how to be determined to get good association. Now, it's very important also to serve the devotees. There is one gentleman, Indian gentleman, in Juhu, Bombay. He used to work in construction. So when we first came to Bombay, the temple was very austere. There was no temple. The deities were just in a small iron shack, and hardly any cover over it. I remember one of our devotees put the raincoat over the top of the Shinhasan to protect the deities from the rain. And when we arrived there, there was one hut where all the men used to live, and the ladies were up on the roof. And that was the ladies' ashram in Juhu, Bombay. So we were all up there with all our belongings and our mosquito nets, and it was the month of May. It's very hot. And so very, very primitive conditions. And there was one hut, and all the men were living there. And the hut was a combination of the men's ashram, the kitchen, the prasada room, all in one. And I remember the first day we came there to eat there, there were these huge rats running across the rafters of the hut. And one of the rats fell in somebody's plate while they were eating. And I shouldn't have thought like that, but I thought, well, I'm glad it was my plate. So anyway, it was very, very primitive conditions. So this man, this Mr. Sethi, decided to build some rooms for devotees to live on top of the tenants. We had tenants in the back, but in India, you cannot get tenants to leave unless you pay them the full price of the selling price of the flat. And then they can leave. There's some law in India. And so the tenants wouldn't leave, so we couldn't get any rooms there. So therefore, Mr. Sethi decided to build rooms on top of the flats. There were many flats in the back. And he wanted to build rooms for devotees to live on top of the tenants' flats. Hariguru. Before, of course, it was very austere. So Mr. Sethi tells the story. One day I was working very hard in cement and sand for my clothes. In that condition, I went to see Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada said, Mr. Sethi, you are building houses for my devotees, and Krishna is building your house in Goloka Vrindavan. So that's how pleased Prabhupada was when you serve the devotees. And Mr. Sethi said, oh, I'm a sinful man, Prabhupada. How can I go to Krishna Loka? Because he wasn't really following the sadhana or anything. I think he was drinking tea at the time. Prabhupada said, this I will see. That is not your duty. I will see you will go to Krishna Loka. It's so wonderful. He has left his body since, and we know where he has gone. Straight to Krishna Loka. So how Krishna loves the devotees, who serves the devotees. So Mr. Sethi said, Guruji showed mercy on that person who served the devotees. He allows him to enter Krishna Loka. That man, when there was an attack on the land and they destroyed the temporary temple that was built over the deities, then Mr. Sethi came to protect the land that night. He came with his own gun to protect it from all the dacoits. And we didn't get permission, but it was a weekend, so then he built the whole temple, rebuilt in one weekend, place for the deities and floor and everything. Because on Monday, they could go to court and stop the devotees. So, but before they went to court, then if they already have something built, then they cannot stop that. So then when they went to court on Monday, Mr. Sethi, he stayed there with, you know, protect the building while they were constructing day and night. For 2 days and nights, they built the whole thing again. And so then the judge said, what is built is one is already built, so we cannot destroy that. And that was allowed to remain. So the lesson that we learned from the young girl is to be determined for good association. To live alone means to live with devotees. Now our second guru for today. Okay, let's wait now. So the lesson of the young girl, living with devotees, associating with devotees, how can we apply that to our lives today?
Can I know your association with devotees?
Try to get association with devotees. Good. Okay, arrow maker. We learned from the arrow maker, absorption. So this arrow maker, he was sitting, you know, in his shop. It was an open shop, you know, right at the road. In India, we have these shops, many of the shops, it's open, and, you know, the road runs right in front of your shop. And there's nothing, you know, when you open the door, the whole front is open, like, it's all open. So this arrow maker was sitting, and he was so concentrated on making his arrow that he didn't notice that the emperor was passing right by his shop with all his soldiers and a huge parade and procession and musicians. He was so absorbed in making his arrow, he didn't even notice. So this we learned from the arrow maker. Devotee should be so absorbed in Krishna, he remains undisturbed by the duality of this world. So many things may be happening around us. But if we are absorbed in Krishna, like that arrow maker was, then we will not be disturbed by anything that happens in this material world. So one time, Lord Krishna said to Uddhava, just as great sages in yoga trance merge into self-realization like rivers merging into the ocean and are not aware of material names and forms, similarly, the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me in their minds, they could not think of their own bodies or of this world or of their future lives. So this is absorption. When Krishna played his flute in the middle of the night, they ran to Krishna. So a lot of us also, we were like absorbed in our things, and then Prabhupada came to the West and he called us, and we just left everything and followed Srila Prabhupada. So we can, now we are in Krishna consciousness, most of us. So when we chant our japa, when we do our service, we can try to be so absorbed in whatever we are doing. As I said in one class, there's two pictures of our mind. There's mind full of things, so that kind of full mind, or there's mindful, to be mindful. That means you are very alert to what you are doing. How did Srila Prabhupada exemplify this quality of being absorbed? Gurudas tells a story. One time we went to Amsterdam and you were subjected to wait many hours to speak about Krishna for only 3 minutes. So they went to one TV studio and they were down in the basement. There were no chairs to sit and they had to wait for a couple of hours before their next show came on. And while they were waiting, there was so much of this nonsense music because that's what they were showing on the TV. And these girls, you know, with mini skirts dancing, so many things were going on, and Prabhupada just had to wait there. And then when they only gave 3 minutes to them, and when Prabhupada sat, they had him up on a platform, and then they shot dry ice, so it looked like there was smoke going all around Prabhupada. He was sitting in the clouds, so to speak. And the devotees were down in the smoke, sitting on the ground. So and the music was loud, they were waiting a long time. And after, on the way back to the airport, Prabhupada was very equipoised. And at the airport, the plane was late, and they imposed an airport tax on the party, but they didn't have any money to pay the airport tax. In those days, we didn't have hardly any money. So the devotees were running around. One was trying to stop the tax. One was trying to borrow the money from passengers. One was getting it. We didn't have ATMs in those days. Or we didn't have internet. We didn't have even phones, hardly. And so they were just on the spot. We just had to try to do something. One was getting interviewed by a reporter. And Jivana was trying to see that Prabhupada was comfortable. And Gurudas said, "I photographed you amidst all this confusion, and your peaceful face appeared because you're always in Vaikuntha, even in the midst of the Amsterdam airport." So much confusion was going on around Srila Prabhupada, and he was just very peaceful and absorbed in Krishna. So this is the lesson we learned from the arrow maker. How can we apply this to our lives today, this type of absorption? What shall we be absorbed in today? Krishna Katha. What else? Chanting Hare Krishna? Listening? Yes. Okay, so then we have the snake. Now we learned a very similar thing from the snake as we did from the young girl. To live alone and avoid materialistic association, that's number one. And number two is don't over-endeavor again. Don't over-endeavor. Let's see what we wrote down here. Use material things for Krishna and avoid bad association. So the snake lives in the fields and he enters the holes of the mice, eats the mice, and lives in the hole. He doesn't have to make his own hole. It's already there. Somebody else does all the work and he just goes and uses it. So how do we understand this lesson? So the devotees, they actually do not over-endeavor to build houses and to do all these things, but they just use what's already there by Krishna's grace. But not that we should avoid responsibility by exploiting someone else's house for our own sense gratification, but the point is, again, absorption, not to be distracted by all these things. And so, from this guru, from the snake, we learn many things. Now, Prabhupada, he talked about this is ajagaravritti. Somebody mentioned this in another class. Ajagaravritti, the activities of the snake. One devotee asked Prabhupada, "But Swamiji, car is a necessity. Don't you think so? Car is a necessity. Car is not necessary. What is the use of car? If you locate yourself to get everything, what is the use of car?" So, in India, you don't really need a car, because it, like you live in Vrindavan, everything's there, all the food is there, whatever you need, you just walk, and you get it. But here, you need a car. I mean, they've made it, the Western civilization has made it, so you absolutely need a car, or a bus, you have to go. You can't just walk and get everything. Everything's there. Doctor, car, whatever you need. Doctor and food. Everything is there, and you don't need to have a car. Rickshaw, we have rickshaws. And even you don't need a rickshaw, because everything is like a 15-minute walk, at most, usually. All that you need. And so this man was saying, we need a car. Prabhupada said, if you need a car, you get a bullock cart, why should you hanker after petrol, mobile oil? Guest said, yes, but don't you think it would be impossible for you to come, mostly? Prabhupada said, no, as long as it's not available, you must take the best advantage. That's another thing. But gradually, we'll develop a society that all these unnecessary rubbish things should be rejected. For those who are interested, let them manufacture a car, we take advantage. So he says, we're not going to go and make a car, but if it's there, then we'll use it. So use it for Krishna's service. That is what you have to do. And then he talked about his how George Harrison has earned money with great hard labor and given us a house in London, 55 lakhs worth. Alfred Ford, great grandson of Henry Ford, has given, still giving money. So those who have our after money, we induce them to spend for me. That's all, let them earn. Then we will live simple life. That is Brahmana. Brahmana does not go to construct a big house. He simply constructs his character. So the Brahmana, it says in the others, the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they offer him, please come here, sit down. So one who is unable to be Brahman, let him be Kshatriya. If he cannot be Kshatriya, let him be Vaishya. Otherwise, let him remain Shudra. But there should be an ideal class of Brahmanas. And that's what Prabhupada wanted is going to be. A society of Brahmanas. And the Brahmana, it's not that they go and they take all the things from other people, but they use them in Krishna's service. And so when they were in L.A., Prabhupada mentioned the storekeepers, the neighbors, they were telling the devotees, you don't work, you live so comfortably, and we live so hard, we work hard, we cannot live so comfortably. So then Prabhupada said, as soon as we asked, okay, you come and live with us? No, we cannot do that. No, we shall work. Prabhupada said, we're asking everyone, come here. But that will not happen. So they say we are escaping, we're living at the cost of others so comfortably. And they see we have so many cars, our faces are bright, eating nicely, and no problem. And so Prabhupada says, we're inviting them, come here, why don't they come? Chant Hare Krishna, dance, very difficult. The most difficult thing, as soon as they come and they know, oh, no tea, no liquor, no meat, no cigarettes. So many no's. Oh, that is impossible. Just like in the early days in America, there was a draft for the army, and they were taking all the young men to go to the war in Vietnam. And, of course, there was a big protest about that. So our devotees were getting exemption because they were religious workers. So one of the people from the army came to check out the temple and see what the devotees were doing. And he said, where's the comfort here? He said, there's no meat, no liquor, no smoking, no gambling. This is more difficult than going to the army. He looked and he said, well, why are they coming here? So They criticized devotees, oh, they are escaping. Prabhupada said, yes, we are escaping this horrible condition of life, meat eating, drinking, and intoxication. We are escaping these things, not escaping happiness. So we learn from the snake to actually not over endeavor, but to use everything we get in Krishna's service. So how can we apply this to our lives today? Our lesson from the snake.
Whatever possessions we have, material possessions, we
try to use. Try to use in Krishna's service, yes. Otherwise it will entangle you and Kali will come. And that's also from the greedy bee.
Simple living.
Not to accumulate things, okay? Good. So next we have the spider. So the spider creates a web, he takes it out from the body, and then brings it back in. So in the same way, the Lord creates the whole thing from himself, and then he brings it back into his body, into him. So there is a verse in the 9th canto, 4th chapter, very interesting verse, which I'll read to you in a minute, because my godbrother, he read this verse on the spider, and he thought, well, how can this be that the Lord creates, because, and then he takes everything inside, so that would mean that the Lord is alone, like the spider. But we know in the spiritual world, he's not alone. He has so many friends, and wives, and mother, father, so many relations. So how is he alone? Well, there's two ways to look at it. One is from the angle of rasa. From the angle of rasa, he's never alone. From the angle of tattva, yes, he's the absolute truth. He's, from him everything is emanating. So in that sense, he's alone. So in the verse, Prabhupada explains this actual idea, 9463. Krishna speaks, O best of the brahmanas, without saintly persons for whom I'm the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme providences. Prabhupada explains, the Lord is self-sufficient. He's atmaram. He doesn't need anybody. But to enjoy his transcendental bliss, he needs the cooperation of his devotees. Isn't that interesting? Although he's alone, he needs, if he wants to enjoy, he needs his devotees to be with him. That's enjoyment. Not alone. Alone he does not enjoy. Prabhupada says, in Vrindavan, although Krishna is full in himself, he wants the cooperation of his devotees, like cowherd boys and gopis, to increase his transcendental bliss. Such pure devotees who can increase the pleasure potency of the Lord are certainly most dear to him. So not only does he enjoy the company of his devotees, but because he's unlimited, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. So then Prabhupada says, so he comes to this world to induce the non-devotees to come back home back to Godhead. He asks them to surrender, because unlimited as he is, he wants to increase his devotees. So some people say, well, why, you know, if he's already enjoying and he has all his devotees, why he wants to have more over here? Because Krishna is unlimited. He has unlimited desire to enjoy, and he wants unlimited devotees to enjoy with. So where is he going to get more devotees? In the spiritual world, everyone's a devotee, so he won't get more up there. So he comes here to get more devotees. Because here, nobody's a devotee, hardly. And so therefore, he comes here to increase his enjoyment, to bring more devotees. And then Prabhupada says something wonderful. Krishna consciousness movement is an attempt to increase the number of pure devotees of the Supreme Lord more and more. It is certain a devotee who helps in this endeavor to satisfy the Supreme Lord becomes indirectly controller of the Lord. So Krishna is very happy if somebody preaches and increases the number of devotees. And if we do that, we become a controller of Krishna. Although the Lord is full of six opulences, he doesn't feel bliss without his devotees. So this is a very wonderful thing to understand. Although he's like the spider, everything's coming from him and coming back in, at the same time, he cannot enjoy without his devotees. So Prabhupada was like that. He created ISKCON and he wants to bring everyone back to Godhead. As Prabhupada himself mentioned here, our movement is for this purpose, to please Krishna by increasing the devotees with whom he can enjoy. So the spider, we can apply this lesson of preaching, actually, to increase the devotees. And our next guru will be the insect trapped by the wasp. And I think it's the last one on your list here. We will have one more after that. So this guru teaches us whatever we will think of, especially at the time of death, we will become in our next life. So imagine if you were to die right now, what is in your mind? Of course, you're in the class, so it's pretty good. But I mean, today, say today, sometime in the day, whatever's in your mind during today, it could be your last thing you think of, and then you die. So be careful what you think. Be careful what thoughts you keep in your mind, because that can be your last thought. And that will take you to your next body. So therefore, we should be like the arrow maker and always be absorbed in Krishna. So the verse says, if out of love, hate, or fear, an embodied soul fixes his mind with intelligence and complete concentration upon a particular bodily form, he will certainly attain the form he is meditating upon. So if we meditate on Krishna, we'll attain the form of his devotee. So once a wasp forced a weaker insect to enter his hive and kept him trapped there. In great fear, the weak insect constantly meditated upon his captor, and without giving up his body, he gradually achieved the same state of existence as the wasp. So in the purport, it explains, by constant meditation upon a particular object, one's consciousness becomes filled with its qualities. So there is a Patanjali Sutra, I believe, that, not Patanjali, it's from the Puranas, that if you meditate upon a pure devotee, you will get one tenth of his qualities, or something like that. So it's good to meditate on a pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada. Then you will also get, if you're absorbed in meditation on him, you will get, so, if you absorb yourself even on Tosi Devi, you will get also. We have Tosi Devi here to associate with Srila Prabhupada, his murti. So it's good to meditate on Srila Prabhupada and the Tosi Devi, Tosi Kant. So how does Srila Prabhupada exemplify this quality? Prabhupada explained that engaging in his service and being concentrated in that way was how we can show our love for him. Shudakirti, his service was to be concentrated on Prabhupada's form, to serve his form all the time. So one time in Los Angeles, at the airport, he was walking behind Srila Prabhupada as he left the airplane, and he said, this was such an amazing experience. It had been 8 months since Prabhupada was in the United States, and how he prepared himself for his grand entrance. Because in those days, there was no security hardly in the airports when Prabhupada was here in the 70s. And we could just go anywhere practically in the airport. And so right up to the gate. I think you can do that now, not in international, but they did it with international there. And Prabhupada was in the airplane, and he said after the seatbelt sign switch went on, instructing the passengers to stay seated, Prabhupada usually got out of his seat and went to the bathroom. Put on tilak. And Shudakirti said, I accompanied him waiting outside the bathroom door, and the walk to and from our seats could be exciting if the plane rocked about due to turbulence or lumbered in for a landing. If one of the attendants tried to stop him, he ignored her request as if he didn't hear her. As he returned to his seat, he carefully hung his bead bag around his neck. When the plane landed, he put a flower garland on, and if there were other garlands, he gave one to each person in his party. As he left the plane and entered the corridor, chanting could be heard in the background. We used to have 200-300 devotees each time in the airport to meet Prabhupada. It was like Harinam. It grew louder and louder as we entered the lounge. Srila Prabhupada's smile grew louder as he approached his loving disciples. On this day, there were several hundred devotees in the airport as Prabhupada walked into the terminal. They were oblivious to everyone and everything going on around them, except for their glorious spiritual master. I have no qualification to describe the feelings of my God brothers and God sisters, as I have never been fortunate enough to have such strong, loving emotions for Srila Prabhupada. It was obvious to everyone in the airport that devotees were feeling transcendental bliss. The loving reciprocation between Prabhupada and his disciples was the easiest to see in his airport lila. For several minutes, it seemed no one's feet touched the ground. Torrents of tears flowed freely from everyone except for one fallen soul, me. We arrived in New York and entered Srila Prabhupada's quarters at about noon. I immediately prepared for his massage. During the massage, my mind was very disturbed. I could not free myself from the pain of thinking everyone had such love for their guru except for me. I was a cheater, an imposter. I finally got the courage to speak by massaging Srila Prabhupada's back. This way I didn't have to speak to him face to face. Srila Prabhupada, I said, all of your disciples have so much love for you, it makes me feel so bad. I lack this intense love. When I'm with you at the airport, I can see everyone dancing, chanting, and crying. I have so much association with you, yet I don't feel this overwhelming love like they do. I hoped he would say something to relieve my mind. He remained silent. Tormented, I finished This massage and went back to my room to finish preparing his lunch. After he chanted Gayatri Mantra, he called me into his room. As I entered, I offered obeisances and looked up with great concern because he had such a serious look on his face. "So, do you like serving me?" he asked. "Oh, yes, Prabhupada," I said. "I like serving you very much." "Then, that is love," he explained. "Everyone can do so many things, singing, dancing, jumping up and down, but you are actually doing something. Isn't this love?" "I guess so, Srila Prabhupada," I said. "So, you just do your service," he continued. "That is all that is necessary. That is what love means, to do service." So Prabhupada was explaining here how to actually be absorbed, how to love, how to, the wasp was absorbed in the insect, so the kirti was absorbed in serving Srila Prabhupada. And he said that is love, that is mercy. So if we have this absorption even at the time of death, then we will go back to Godhead. There was one lady, I think, when Prabhupada went to visit Mexico, and she was asking about being absorbed. And she asked Srila Prabhupada, "Is it all, so you're teaching that it's, we should absorb our mind in Krishna at the time of death?" She said, "Is it okay if we absorb our mind in you?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes, that is all right." So this lady, she did that. She was, you know, at the time of her death, she was just seeing a picture of Srila Prabhupada, and she left very blissful. So it's good to be absorbed in pure devotee or in Krishna in this life, and then you can actually achieve that at the time of death. So the last, our last guru, which is not on the list, is the body. And from the body, we will also learn detachment, because the body is temporary. Now, the verse goes, "The material body is also my spiritual master, because it teaches me detachment. Being subject to creation and destruction, it always comes to a painful end. Thus, although using my body to acquire knowledge, I always remember it will ultimately be consumed by others, and remaining detached, I move about this world." Now another verse explains how the body is like a man with many wives. So who are all the wives of the body? Are all the senses. The tongue wants to go one way, and the ears want to go another way. So all your senses are taking you in different directions, harassing the conditioned soul, pulling in many directions. The thirst wants you to drink, the tongue wants you to have food, and everything is there. The belly harasses you until it's full, the ears demand you hear pleasing sounds. So Śrīla Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura mentions, after understanding this verse, one should merely offer, without attachment, the bare necessities to the guru of one's body. Don't do everything the guru of the body says. Then you will be in trouble. One should keep one's body fit and working in the simplest possible way, and that is the sum and substance of service to this so-called guru. If you want to faithfully serve your body, consider the body pulls the consciousness in many ways at once. So for the servant of the body, there's no possibility of understanding God consciousness. So what we learn from the body is to offer without attachment the bare necessities of life. That is what we should do. Keep it fit, working in the simplest possible way. So how did Srila Prabhupada exemplify this quality? Simplicity of the body, taking what you need. While Prabhupada was having a massage, letters were often read to him. So one letter discussed the preaching activities of Prabhupada's disciples in Yugoslavia. It described how the people received prasadam, heard Harinam, and bought books. They would leave with their hands full of books, their stomachs full of prasad, and their purses empty. Prabhupada said, "This is my program. Hands full, stomachs full, purses empty." So when I hear the stories of their preaching, I forget about my disease condition. It makes me feel very happy. So this, when Prabhupada heard how people were getting Krishna consciousness, then he would forget about his body. Now another time, when Los Angeles, 1972, after Prabhupada's morning walk, a group of five or six devotees stood in the downstairs hallway and watched as he walked upstairs using his cane. "Jai Srila Prabhupada," they gratefully chanted. He turned toward us with an endearing and beautiful smile. "I was just thinking," he said, "when I was young, I would run up the stairs. Now, that same desire is there. I still want to run up the stairs, but due to this body, now I can't run. I still want to do all these things, but like when I was young, I wanted to be active. The body is very limited. He continued walking up the stairs as we paid our heartfelt obeisances. Prabhupada had voluntarily accepted so many inconveniences to save us from this foolishly gross bodily perception of life. So this is Srila Prabhupada. And we also, we're old, and sometimes we forget, and we do run down the stairs, and then we, and sometimes we fall. So we realize, uh-oh, I forgot. I'm not young anymore. We do things that we think we can do, but then the body shows us, no, we cannot do that. So, a few more stories about this material world. Kirtananda was telling how they were coming from the airport, and there was a sign on the road that said, detour, temporary inconvenience, permanent improvement. And Prabhupada laughed and said, all we have received is a temporary inconvenience. There's no permanent improvement in this world. Yeah, in India especially. Whenever they do something to the roads, it always becomes worse than it was before. It never becomes better. Only worse. And how they made all the sewage system in Vrindavan. And to make the sewage system, they had to clog up whatever already was there. So now it's coming all over the roads instead of just the sides. Of course, what they laid down is the sewage system is never going to work because they made such thin pipes. It's not going to work. It's just, someone was getting money to do it, and so they did it, but they didn't, how they did it, it didn't matter. And so now it became worse. And some roads have been all broken up, and they're still broken up, and full of rocks, and it's pretty bad. Anyway, this is how it is. So the last story about Prabhupada in Mexico City. Prabhupada was taking this massage, and Shuddha Kirti said, I was massaging his back when Paramahansa saw me appear before us on the veranda. He offered his obeisances and sat up. He looked at me vigorously, massaging His Divine Grace's back, and smiled broadly. For some reason, that triggered me. I started laughing at the sight of my godbrother sitting there waiting to ask Shuddha Prabhupada a question. That opened the floodgates. We both started laughing uncontrollably. I was laughing so hard I could not do my service anymore and stopped massaging Prabhupada's back. The Prabhupada said, inquired in a calm voice, what is so funny? I looked at Paramahansa, hoping he had some insight into this display before our beloved guru, but he sat there quietly. I had to say something. I was never very good at speaking on the spot in awkward situations, especially with Srila Prabhupada, and this was one of them. Finally, I said, I do not know Prabhupada. When I see Paramahansa, sometimes it just makes me laugh. Prabhupada smiled and said, that's okay. Laughing is a Vaishnava activity. Relieved, Paramahansa and I went back to our service. So it's okay to laugh, Mr. Luis. One more thing about the body. Prabhupada said in his last days, I think for 6 months he wasn't eating, the last 6 months. So he said to Jayadatta Swami in a morning walk, these days I am not eating, but I am working, so you are saving money. That was Prabhupada. You're all saving money on me. I'm working hard, and I'm not eating. Okay, so the lesson of the body is to live simply, take the bare necessities, keep the body fit for serving Krishna as best you can. So does anybody have any questions on these six rules for today? Everyone's out on Harinam, so that's very good. And some of you came, so I'm happy about that. Also to see you here. Yes?
I would like to ask, one of the gurus is the son to give away sweet everyone.
The son.
Donation to Mataji for all her lectures. Because she actually doesn't have any fixed income. So whoever can give, please apply the lessons.
Any other questions?
It's just a small thing about laughing. Laughing in India is considered uncultured.
Oh, yeah, laughing in India is unfortunate. But they have this kind of laughing guru also in India, where people get together for an hour a day and they all just laugh greatly.
They call it laughing yoga.
Yeah, my god sister said she met this guru and she was in front of him, she was laughing hysterically, so crazily that he looked at her. What's going on?
But just generally laughing, especially the woman.
It's good. Yeah, no, in India they don't. They're very serious. Very serious. The women in India. They're serious. You can't, they don't speak hardly.
Yeah, a couple of times I laughed with my friends and they just all looked at us.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Any other questions? So today's our last class. Thank you very much for coming. God bless you.
Thank
you, Mataji, for your lecture.
Yeah.